talk too long. I know the show doesn't start till 9, so I figure 2 hours, hour and 45 minutes. My name is Jill. I'm a drug addict alcoholic. Let's see, my sobriety date is March 7th, 92. It might be the 6th, but it's one of those two. It's the 6th. Okay. I can't remember. All right, so I was wondering why I was so nervous this week. And then I realized that everybody put a lot of pressure on me about speaking tonight. And was I gonna do jokes and stuff? Not intentionally. Okay. Usually I try to do what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. If I did that, we probably would be here close to 2 hours. So I'm gonna tell you what it's like now and try to reference that back to what it was like and what happens, because I think you all know what it was like for the most part. So let's see. I am 99.9% satisfied with my life today. I think the point, whatever percentage comes in, that I do not like winter. And honestly, there's a part of me that has some sadness when it comes to winter, because if my family wasn't here and I didn't have strong ties, I'd be someplace else warm. But ironically, over time, I've grown to have a very good relationship with my mother, and although I have three other siblings, she has chosen me, or I chose her, to be the one that helps her out a lot. And so it occurred to me one day that I can't just pick up and go, even though a huge part of me wants to. So if I didn't have so many toys, we could probably go on more vacations, or if I had more vacation time. But and I reference my mother because I will tell you that there's somebody in the program, he's not here, that worked for a place that my mother worked for, and he's like, "Oh, I love your mother. She's so nice." And I'm like, "Yeah, she's really matured over the years." Gesundheit. So growing up, I have an older sister, an older brother, me, and then I have a younger brother. And my mom was always, seemed like she was always angry or complaining about something, whether it was work, something in the house, I don't know, just, you know. And she had a daughter, me, who would rather play Hot Wheels and climb trees and beat up boys in the neighborhood, and have short hair, and you know, the rule at the time was you don't talk back to my mother, which I think I did one time, but only when I had a distance or over the phone. But she was very emotionally and verbally abusive. Yeah, we got spanked, but I think all kids in that generation got spanked, so it's not like it's, like it's a big deal. So when I come to meetings today and I hang around with people in the fellowship, my heart is filled with joy when I see people in the fellowship. I have good relationships with people today. I love the fact that nothing is off limits when we're in a group. So don't bring something up that you don't want everyone else to call you on or tease you about or whatever it is. And my older brother used to tease me constantly. And I will tell you that today I have a thicker skin than I used to about that stuff. But I love the fact that today we're doing it in a loving way most of the time. In a caring way. And there's an intimacy that grows amongst the people that go to meetings together and that hang out together, that go to retreats, that go to out for coffee afterwards. There's an intimacy that I have with most of the people in this room that I don't have with my family. You know more about me than they do, and that's intentional because they don't ask and I don't tell. My sister has come to a couple meetings, I think, but for the most part, this is my own private little thing. I have found that somewhere along my journey of recovery, that I have not matured all the way, but I have matured enough to have good relationships with people. I actually have relationships with people at work, with people I used to work with. We've actually gone out together. Yes, I've gotten fired for calling somebody an ass, like her name was Ass. Like, hey, Ass, what are you doing, Ass? So yeah, there was times where I didn't have good relationships with people at work. People tend to frown on it when you call them Ass. Or I've gotten, I guess I had some characteristics of my mother where I can be verbally abusive as well. And I realize that time has gone by very fast, not tonight, but so like 10 years ago, or a little bit more than that, I was working at this one place and I met this lady, she was my manager, and I hadn't quite matured all the way. And so I would tell people what I thought of them in an email, never do that. So I'm going to give you little life lessons that I've learned along the way. Don't call people ass at work, like that's their name, and don't send stuff out in an email. So I was constantly getting in trouble or having some sort of conflict with somebody at work. And I changed jobs, and I ended up working with this person again, and I said, do you know that I have not gotten in trouble once? She's like, you're kidding me. And I'm like, no. I have not gotten in trouble for yelling at somebody or putting them down or whatever it was that I was doing. I don't know what happened. I don't know if I hit my head one night or but I think what it was is I grew to, it says in the big book, love and tolerance of others is our code. That's a very hard thing to accomplish. And I'm not saying that I love and tolerate everyone, because that is not the case. Usually if I can't tolerate you, I leave. I remove myself from you and your situation. But I've grown to have an understanding that the world does not revolve around me, that I have no idea what's going on in other people's lives, especially in traffic on my way to work. I know when I am peaceful and serene today because I drive in the right-hand lane all the way to work, I listen to the same station or whatever it is, and I'm not in a hurry. When I'm not spiritually fit, everybody's going slow and I'm in a hurry. and there's nothing good on the radio. I mean, I have XM radio. I could probably go through all whatever, how many stations there are on there, and there wouldn't be a song that I like. So then I shut it off. That doesn't help. Then I turn it back on. But I've learned that when I'm driving in the car next to me, I used to think that people, that guy purposely got on the freeway to cut me off, you know? Seriously, that's why I thought. I'm like, you son, you know? I don't think that today. In fact, I just let people go because I don't know what's going on in their personal life. I don't know what's going on at home. I don't know whether, if they're late for work today, they're going to get fired and they can't afford to lose their job. They got bad news or whatever it is. So I try to let people just live their own stuff without taking it on as it's all about me. You know, there's a, I have a, what is that, an inferiority or a ego with a inferiority complex or whatever. I want to be great, but at the same time, I don't. So secretly it's okay, but don't ask me about it or don't, you know, point it out. So over the last, I don't know, I'm going to tell you that it's taken me, I think I'm one of those people that was, it says sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, that I was a little bit more slowly, that I'm a very sensitive person, and I don't mean like teasing stuff, but sensitive to and very observant of the things that go on around me. And I've been like that since I was a little girl. And I take all that stuff on. There, it's best for me not to watch the news sometimes or not to listen to the radio because those things start to bother me. People I used to work with losing their job, it totally bothered me. I mean, I would do anything to help those people find another job, and they're not even people I talk to on a regular basis. But as a result of that, there was a lot of, I had a lot of hurt and a lot of anger by things that had happened to me or things that I had seen. And just being allowed to be who I was. You know, I often tell my husband, Chris, that you have a wonderful woman. She does the snow blowing. She fixes the motorcycles. She does the lawn mowing. She does, you know, I'm saying, I mean, anything that needs to be done around the house, cooking, cleaning, dusting, fixing stuff, I can all do. So I'm thinking, you don't know how good you got it. Especially when it snows. In fact, we just bought a new snowblower. So I said at work, you know what's going to happen is that first snow, I'm going to be leaving early because there's going to be a race to see who gets home to get to use that snowblower first. But then I was asked to please let him use it first. So I have to decide on that. But what I am is, I was told that girls do not climb trees. Girls do not. I was a bully. I think I was angry, and I was angry. And I used to really be protective of my younger brother. And so if you messed with him or anything happened in the neighborhood, I would come over there and kick your ass. And at one time I was tall because girls grow first. So like all my little brother's friends, and then I was like this giant, and they didn't want to play football with me anymore because I was too rough. But I mean, when I think about a kid that I see today, if there's something that they really like to do naturally, to me, that's who they are. I don't get to dictate what a child should and shouldn't be. They just are who they are. Yeah, I can try to steer them a certain way. I mean, I could probably dig up a picture of me in this little tutu. My mom sent me to dance class, which was great, but I can't do a cartwheel when I was 5, and I can't do one now. It just doesn't work. It would be an injury at this point. But, you know, it just wasn't who I was. It wasn't who I was. And there wasn't a lot of girls in the neighborhood. My brother is 13 months younger than me. He has always been my favorite person. We always hung out together. We were the best of friends. I mean, we had some good fights together, but we still made up. And so I had him as my friend. And, you know, I like to play sports. And I'm fairly decent at it. Even video games. Sorry. I love Chris. You know, I mean, I still play softball. Yes, obviously I'm not in shape like I used to be. Well, I'm shape, but not, you know, like an athletic shape. But I'll still get out there and play, and I don't care. And I play because I like to play. For a few years, I was mad because we would lose, because I'm competitive. And then I realized, do you want to play or not play? And I decided I'd rather be out there playing and have a good time than be out there and have a crabby time and win. So I was telling somebody that doing volunteer work and going to area will prepare you for job skills. I am not kidding. This is like free on-the-job training. Do you want to know how to get along with multiple people in a meeting situation? Where you're not, I'm not talking about a meeting, I'm talking about like a business meeting. Do you want to learn how to bite your tongue when you really want to say something? Do you want to learn how to be responsible for putting a report together or having to do something outside of the meeting and bring that information back? Do you want to organize things? Get involved. Good job skills. Good job skills. So there was a speaker last night who said that he thinks that he was born an alcoholic. And he said because he used to steal his neighbor's Hot Wheels that he liked. And I was like, I used to do that, but I used to sand them down and paint them a different color. So not only would I steal them, but then I would sand them down and paint them so we could still play with them and he wouldn't think they were his. So then I started thinking, oh crap, maybe I was born that way too, I don't know. I have always felt like I didn't fit in, especially growing up, because I'm a girl and I want to do the boy games. I want to climb the tree. I want to play football. I want to play baseball. I want to ride my bike. I want to do that type of stuff. I don't want to play horsey with the girl down the block. I don't even like horses at that point. I had a Barbie, but I don't know. You know, what I think that was just like a token here, here's a Barbie. I fit in with the boys for a while, but then there's a certain weird change that happens where girls and boys don't like each other right before they like each other again. And so I didn't really fit in. And in school, you know, my brother Dave is extremely charismatic, and he's very intelligent, and just an all-around wonderful person. And so he is very bright, and he's very smart. And apparently, I used to come home from kindergarten or whatever, and I would sit down with him and teach him all the stuff that I learned. I would teach him how to read, and I would teach him how to do this stuff. Well, if I'd have known that he was going to put pressure on me later on in school, I probably would have never done that. They were going to move him ahead of grade because he was, you know, one of the smart kids. Thank God my parents didn't do that because we would have been in the same class. And I was a C student with very little effort. I got an A in art and an A in Phi Ed. I didn't care about school. I was bored. I would rather sit there and talk. And, you know, I always said I hated people, but, you know, I got in trouble a lot for talking. So apparently I hated people after school because even all through, I mean, through grade school, through high school, you know, just a little social butterfly. And so I my freshman and sophomore year of high school, I got like a 2.9 something. And it was right around that time that my parents got divorced, and I just basically stopped going to school and started drinking a lot. And then my mom would say, "How can you have 34 absences in one class?" I'm like, "I don't know, they must not have put it down." I realized that if I look back, my mother was very naive, because nobody would get away with that shit with me, because I'm like, 35 absences, you didn't go. So I didn't graduate on time. I was a credit short. So I went to summer school my senior year and took drawing and painting and ceramics. I got a 4 point, and I got my diploma after that. My mother was pissed, very disappointed in me. There was no party, there's no pictures. In fact, a few years ago, she goes, "Oh, you should put on your gown so we can take pictures." I'm like, I'm 40 years old, why would I do that? I'd have to dye my hair. I did not have white hair when I came in this program. I had just turned 20. And I went to DePaul Hospital, and I stayed sober, I don't know, about 15 months. And I had some relapsing, whatever else. And the reason I got sober on the 6th, I can't remember. It doesn't really matter anymore. Is because I went down to Arizona with somebody I met in the program, and we started drinking, and we got in a big fight. And I had to borrow money to take the bus back. I had $5 in my pocket. And that is a long-ass bus ride from Phoenix, Arizona, all the way to Milwaukee. And if I had more than $5 and I could have got a drink on the way, I probably would have. So that's the only reason that day is my sobriety date. You know, it was difficult. I know there's a lot of young people come in, and I think, oh, I wish I was still young, because then I could, and where I am now, because then I could tell you that you can make it through that time. It was hard turning 21 and not being able to go out and have a drink. Of course, then a relapse, so that didn't make a difference after that. But before that, there was that thought of, oh, I'm going to be 21 and I can't even get a legal drink. I am so grateful that they had DePaul Hospital and other treatment centers where you actually got 28 days or whatever it was. I don't know that when I went in there that I knew anything that I wanted, besides I knew I had a problem and I couldn't stop. I didn't know anything about meetings. They made us go to meetings. And at the time, there was a lot of meetings at DePaul Hospital, and there was hundreds of people there. If this was the cafeteria at DePaul, it would have been packed. If you got there late, you probably would have had a stand. And so I went to the meetings, and when I got out of there, then I was asked to go for coffee, which I didn't really want to do because I didn't know any of these people. And I didn't have any money. That's okay, we'll get you coffee. Are you gonna show up? Yeah. I will tell you that is where I made my friendships, and that is where we talked more about the steps, we talked more about the program, we talked about how each person was doing in their day, because in a meeting, it's really hard to get all that out in 5 minutes or less. Hint, hint. So after the meeting was to me the fellowship, the fellowshipping. And I was asked, are you going to be at this meeting? And I wanted to say no, but I would, yeah, well, you better be there because we'll call you. And I started going to meetings, at the time, I felt that I was very aware of what was going on with me. Looking back, I realized I had absolutely no idea. Like I said, I was very angry. This one lady said, I can make you angry. I'm like, you can't make me angry. Like 5 minutes later, I'm like whipping this ball in this room as hard as I can. I'm like, obviously she can. It didn't take much. So I went to meetings, and I went to a meeting every single day. I went to clubs that were open during the day because it was a safe place to go. I don't care. I didn't want to talk to anybody. I didn't want to go to a meeting there. I just wanted to sit and have a cup of coffee because in that moment, I felt like I was in a safe place. And I took the bus. At the time, I lived over by Northridge, and that's a long bus ride to get down to DePaul. Although I saw on the news that the buses are doing like 55 and a 25, I'm like, I never got that bus driver. Because I sure wouldn't have called up and complained that he was speeding. So I took the bus. I ended up moving down to the side of town, and I would ride my bike until someone stole that, and then I roller skated a couple times, but that one hill over on Howard is very steep. So then I think I walked. Or I would ask for a ride. I have been a secretary, a treasurer, a GSR at several meetings. I did it begrudgingly. I did it because someone volunteered me and I wanted to say no and they said you can't. And in my head I said screw you. And then I was pissed the whole entire year of my commitment, but I showed up every week. I actually did clean the ashtrays at Friday night, and then I would purposely leave a little water in there because I was trying to quit smoking. Sorry. Because then you put your cigarette in there and it gets all wet. I've worked the steps. I've done several fourth steps. The first one was at DePaul. I don't even think that counts as a fourth step. The second one was like a laundry list of shit I wanted to tell people since I was, 2 years old and just went down all these things that happened and blah, blah, blah. It was only later on that I went through and did a more thorough one, and I did it how it's outlined in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, I when we read that, usually in a meeting, Mr. Bob, Mr. Joe, whatever, people focus on that. Honestly, I think you can skip that shit and you can flip the page over or go down to the bottom of that paragraph and read that through the end of the chapter because that's where the information comes from and what you're supposed to do with what you write down. That is the, now I take what these things and I put what these people have done aside and I don't look at it and then I go through and I look at what is my part in it. What is the exact nature of my wrong in every one of those situations? It doesn't matter what Mrs. Jones did with my wife. It doesn't matter. I put that stuff aside and I go through this. Because that is the root of my problem. If I don't get a good list of what's wrong with me, it doesn't matter what I do in 6 and 7 or any of the other steps. Sooner or later, if I don't work on those things, I'm going to start on step one again, and I'm going to have to go back through. I struggle a lot with step 2 and 3, because I overcomplicated the shit out of step 2. In fact, I went out and bought that book, Came to Believe. It didn't have any answers in there, just so you know. You might have answers now. I haven't read it since then. But at the time when I was looking for an explicit thing that said, Jill, here is what this step means, it didn't have that in there. And what it says is all I have to do is have an open mind to the concept of something greater than myself. I went to church when I was a kid. You know, I half listened. I went to Sunday school. I screwed around, got in trouble in catechism. You know, barely passed that. Mom had to come in and talk to the pastor. It says we came to believe, which is a past tense. I have absolutely come to believe. You know, as we read, we agnostics, and we read part of chapter 5 the other day, and I wanted to go back through that because, you know, it says self-reliance and self-will is the root of my problem. As soon as I say, you know what, I am not going to rely on myself, I'm going to rely on a power greater than myself, it basically says, hey, this huge treasure chest of all the stuff that you want, happiness and peace and calmness and whatever you want in your life is now here for your taking. But as soon as I say, oh, good, I can use that for my own personal gain, then the thing closes again. Once I forget that the only reason I have this in front of me is because I have a reliance and a faith in a higher power, you know, I'm good. It's not always like that. The reason I struggle with the third step is because I like to know stuff. I want to know what time we're doing the 50-50, because if I buy a ticket, I don't want to be like, oh, I want to go home. Now I have to wait for the damn 50-50 at 11 o'clock. You know what I'm saying? I like to know the stuff in advance. Not everything. I've gotten better. I don't need to know every detail in advance, but so I like to plan. And so the third step requires that I don't plan, that I get up and I go about the things that are in front of me to do. And most of the time it's let the dog out, you know, feed the dog, take a shower, go to work, and whatever happens during my day, I take care of. You know, the sixth and seventh step, you know, somebody said, oh, well, that's like if you think about spitting on someone versus if you actually do it. And I was like, and I often think about that because I've really gotten good on the not spitting part. I'm not going to lie and say that the thought of it does not go through my head. The point is I don't share it anymore. So I seem a lot healthier. Inside, yeah. You know, we're at the state fair and this guy's walking with his cream puffs. And I was like, man, I just want to go up and hit that thing, you know? And I said to my brother, Dave, I really just wanted to hit that. He goes, you know, I was thinking the same thing. I'm like, ugh. There are times I wish I could get myself to actually do stuff like that, but I did do it to somebody at work with a cupcake and he got mad. So I continued to work on it. I continued to look at, it's like doing a mini, what we read in the chapter 5 was, if I think about the fourth step afterwards where I put aside what that person has done, I take a look at it, and I try to fix that, whatever, that's kind of how I try to approach situations in my life on a daily basis that come up that I don't like or I feel at odds with, is a mini fourth step right there. Okay, take what this person, put it over there, and then now let's go through and see where was I selfish, self-centered, self-seeking. I'm sure I can find it if I look. I used to have no, I didn't care about you, and I would tell you exactly what I thought. And then my sponsor and people in the program are like, you can't do that, now you have to make amends. And I realized that I hated making amends more than I liked telling you exactly what I thought about you, so I stopped doing that. And I kept it to myself, and then I would tell somebody later after the meeting, probably my sponsor or somebody. I try to remember to say a prayer every day. There are times when I had to force myself to say, please help me and thank you for another day clean and sober, even though I don't mean it, because I have added that onto prayers, because my God knows already what I'm thinking and what I need. It's just a matter of me asking. So to come up with some bull crap about, please God, give this person all the wealth in the world and riches and make them so happy, is bullshit. I don't really mean it. I'm doing it because someone suggested that I do it, but I don't really mean it. So I would say, even though I don't mean it, I would just preface that so you know I wasn't lying. I tattle on myself. If I keep stuff, too much stuff to my, I do keep a lot of stuff to myself, but if I keep too much, the wrong stuff to myself today, I will get in trouble because my brain is very powerful and very intelligent, and it can convince me of shit that's not true. And I will argue, that's not true. Yes, it is true. Look at the facts. Right. Let's manipulate this. Mm-hmm. Let's make this into what I want it to be. Before I know it, I'm off over here doing this, and that's not even right. So I tell people, even the smallest little thoughts that come up today that I know aren't right, I say, oh, by the way, I was thinking about this. No, you can't do that. I said, yeah, I just thought I'd run it by you. There was a good friend of mine used to say, you know, how would it be if you opened your life to the scrutiny of others? And I think about that, and I think, so if I invited you guys all to come in and watch Jill's Day on, you know, on Sunday, what did I do? Did I follow the principles of the program? Was I honest? Was I, you know, sometimes I'm a little lazy, I think, but what did I do today to give me character? Did I have integrity? Did I follow through on the things I said I was going to follow through on? There are days where I don't want anybody to know that, and I don't want anybody to see that. What I have found is that if I could, my mom says I'm too generous. There was a point in recovery where, so I actually went to school and got a degree, an associate's degree. And so I got a career. And, you know, started making some money, so I decided I would accumulate a whole bunch of shit I don't need. And then I was like, oh, I need that. I thought I had that, but I can't find it. So then I'm in the basement one day, and I'm like, oh my God, I don't even know what I have. You know, I already had this, but I bought another one. And I called my dad, and I said, I am so ashamed of myself that I have so much stuff I don't even know what I have, so I can go out and buy another thing. So I started giving stuff away to people that, okay, I guess that's kind of, I would get to people that needed it. I was just, they had a deemed need worthy, but honestly, if you said you needed a dresser, I was like, come on, I don't want to get a dresser, I don't care. You know, I can honestly say that I have like one chair that I could probably get rid of and that's it, that I've gone through and got rid of so much stuff that I don't have anything to give today, and that pains me in some ways, that I can't always do what I want to do. I generally take interest in what people say at the meetings, and I try to remember to ask them about certain things, you know. How is your job? How is your cat? How is, you know, whatever it is. In the summer, well, I never knew this. This is kind of weird. So I go over the high-rise bridge on the way to work every morning. Did you know that in the summer, the sun is over there, but in the fall, the sun is back there when it comes up. So it's really a bummer driving over that bridge, and I'm trying to see the sunrise, and it's way back there. Or during the winter, it doesn't come up at all. But every morning, I try to look over and see that sun coming up. Because it's a reminder of a new day. It's a reminder of a higher power in my life today. if I think back on all the times that I had worry or doubt or whatever it was in my life, if when I just got out of the way and I prayed about it, I just kept doing what was in front of me, it always worked out. The difference is that, you know, I have a set agenda, a plan, that, you know, somebody said, you want to make God laugh, tell him your plans. I'm sure he's having a great chuckle up there. And I think he has a sense of humor, at least mine does, because funny karma type stuff happens to me. It's not just a talking about thing, it's a knowing thing in my life today. There is absolutely a calmness and a peace. I used to sit in meetings, my leg would jiggle. I couldn't listen to what you were saying because I was busy talking up here, or you would say one word and then pew, I would be off on some other tangent in my mind over there. You know, driving like a crazy woman. Part of it is today, I don't want the ticket, and your insurance goes skyrocketing. And there's a lot of crazy people out there today, I think more than there was before. But anyways, but I just know in my heart that things are going to work out. That it may not be what I think would be the ultimate ending to a situation, but I know that I'm going to be okay no matter what it is. I've come to realize that, this is a spiritual program. And it says, once we clear up spiritually, everything else clears up after that. I'm sure Jeff could quote that. I don't remember exactly the whole line. But basically it says, once I get rid of my spiritual malady, I straighten up physically and mentally. So the craziness in my head doesn't go away until I have my spirituality back. And I have seen people in the face of calamity, in the face of death, be absolutely peaceful and calm because they have a spirituality in their life. Which means that no matter what comes up in my life, if I have that spirituality, if I have my God in my life, I can face any situation calmly and rationally. You know, what was that we read? Serenity in the face of calamity. You know, my first instinct today is not to go out and go crazy. It's usually what can I do for this person first, you know? And then I'll go kick somebody's ass, which I probably won't do, but part of me wishes I could still do that. I did have a punching bag at one time, but I got rid of it. I don't get angry like that anymore. I very rarely. I don't have a need to punch walls, which I don't do anymore. In fact, it's gotten to the point where, so I used to hit stuff, and then I would beat my mattress, and then I realized I was scared the shit out of the dog, so I have to go downstairs in the basement, put pillows on a chair, so I could do it in private so I don't scare the dog. You know, I always wanted to be an adult, but man, there's some times that it'd be nice if someone laid out my clothes in the morning. And I early in recovery, we were not very nice to each other for the most part. At some of the meetings, we would, you know, if you were an asshole, we'd call you an asshole. If you were a jerk, you know, and we'd have these drag out arguments and fights. And then it was like, hey, you want to go out for coffee? Sure, let's go out for coffee. It always reminded me of the Wile E. Coyote cartoon where he punches into work and so does the sheep. And then all day they're like going at it. And then they're like, see you later, Ralph. See you later, Bob. And they go home and they, you know, let's go out to lunch. All right. But they're able to have their different, we were able to have our differences and still maintain sobriety and still watch after each other and partake in each other's lives and make sure each of us was okay. And a lot of those people are still here today. If I can't be honest with you about what you're doing, I am doing you a disservice. If I don't call you on actions that are deemed inappropriate, I'm doing you a disservice. And obviously this is my opinion. To say, well, I can't say that to somebody because they might go out and use bullshit. Lying to them about the reality of this disease and what it will do if you do not get honest and you don't change your ways will make them go out and use again. You know, it says that we work towards godliness. That doesn't mean that I'm going to be a god someday. It says I work towards that, and what does that encompass? Integrity, honesty. If I make a commitment, I keep the commitment. If I can't, I call somebody, hey, can you cover for me? I'm going to, you know, I don't steal. You know, thank God my friends don't have Hot Wheels today. I have my own Hot Wheels, actually, if you've ever been to my house. You know, at times I think that we're too coddling and too nice to people that come in because we don't want to hurt their feelings. And you know, people that I don't sponsor a lot of girls, and I haven't, mostly because I think I was very unapproachable, and sometimes apparently I still am. But once you talk to me, you'll realize I'm not unapproachable. I used to actually have a sweatshirt that said, leave me alone. I wear it to meetings. Because like, well, if I'm going to be unapproachable, I might as well just advertise. But I'm not going to coddle you, and I'm not going to do the shit for you. It says we trudge the road to happy destiny. It does not say that we skip along or somebody drags us or, you know, because I'm not, once I took responsibility for my actions, I no longer am a victim. The things that happened to me as a child, I'm not responsible for because I'm a child. Everything, every decision I made from 16, 17 and forward that got me wherever I am today is all my fault and my responsibility. You know, my sister cracks me up because, you know, if you don't go to work, people get upset and you have a tendency to get fired. And it's like, well, shit, you didn't go to work. You know, I believe that I create my own destiny. What is it that I want to do? Where is it that I want to be? And how do I get there? I encourage every girl that I sponsor, that I know, to go back to school. I don't care if you get an associate's degree. I don't care what it is. I'll tell you, I thought I was stupid. In fact, I think I was probably told I was stupid because Dave's smart, Jill's a C student. I didn't care. Whatever, you know. But I went back to school and I had like a 3-point, what I almost made honor. I would have had a 4-point, but that stupid technical calculus class, I've never worked so hard for a C in my life. But I proved to myself that I'm not dumb. I got straight A's in math. I can figure that algebra, I'm like, pew, you know? And it proved to myself, I'm like, well, you must not be dumb because obviously you did very well and you understand this stuff. So whatever somebody told me or whatever my belief was that I carried all those years is not true. Am I a genius? Absolutely not. I have some pretty good ideas that Chris does not agree with. Our dog's name is Tasha, so his favorite line is, "Tasha, I don't know what's wrong with your mother." I have some pretty good inventions I was going to make, but I didn't. I used to come in and I would laugh, but it would be inappropriate laughing. I would laugh at somebody's misfortune, or I would purposely do something to pick on somebody and to laugh at them. Or I would laugh because I was uncomfortable, or whatever it was. Today I laugh at many things, often by myself in the car laughing, laying in bed, about to fall asleep, thinking about my day, and then remembering something and laughing about it. And it's a genuine laugh. It's a man, I think this shit's funny. And I often think about this, and I think, if I had not gone through the things I've gone through, experienced the things that I've experienced, I wouldn't be able to laugh. You don't know true happiness until you've been truly sad. You don't know wealth until you've been truly poor. So I laugh, and I laugh a lot, and I play pranks on people at work, and I got this sign that says, "Live your life and forget your age," so I decide that's my motto. Sometimes I'm a little immature, but there's a part of me that doesn't care about that, because I never want to stop having a good time. I try not to do it at other people's expense, besides throwing large stuffed horses on people's lawns and things like that. But it was harmless. Nobody got hurt. I still come to meetings. If you had told me that 20 years into my sobriety I'd be still coming to meetings, I probably would have left. I don't even know if I gave you a story on recovery. I'm not gonna go through the drunk log, because I don't really have a good one, I don't think. I love the people I have in my life today, and I'm grateful for them. There are times when I lay down at night and I start saying, "Thank you, God, for this." Usually it starts with my dog, because she's laying next to me, and she's really, really soft if you've never petted her. She is. She's like the softest dog in the world. Anyways, so I'm like, "Thank you for this dog." And then I'm like, "Oh, I'm so comfortable." And I start noticing the things around me. I'm like, "Oh, my mattress is comfortable. My bed is comfortable. Thank you for this. Thank you for the house is the right temperature. Thank you for food." And I can go backwards through my entire day and everything that's going on and say thank you. And usually I fall asleep before I ever make it past, like, dinner. Because if I really break it down, I have so many things that I'm grateful for. And the reason I say sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. So Chris and I have been, next month, January, we'll be together, married 2 years. Yay. He is, and God bless him, he's a very patient man. Because if you don't think I play pranks and screw with him, you're wrong, because I do. But he's my friend, and it's taken me a long time to allow somebody into my life and open up my heart enough to have somebody there every single day. Because I'm not going to lie, I do like my alone time. But then I had, then the last time he was out of town, Carmen's like, I'm like, don't tell anybody, but I'm actually lonely. Which is weird because I've never really been lonely. I mean, I thought maybe I was lonely. I don't know. But it's taken me a long time to get to the point where I can love another person despite idiosyncrasies or things that go on that I don't like or whatever it is. You know, I don't want to change anything about him. You know, he's like, you should grow your hair long. It's like, so should you, you know? So it's, and you know, okay, so here's the best part. And so we're going on a cruise, I need a swimsuit. I go with my mom and Chris. Another life lesson. Don't go with your mom and your husband. So my mom's got me in something that she should be wearing, and Chris has got me in something that a 16-year-old should be wearing. He's like, I think you look. I'm like, maybe around the house, but not outside. And what gets me is that, thank God I have somebody that sees me that way, that truly loves me enough to say, I think you would look good in this. Because I don't see myself that way. And there's no way in hell I would ever wear something like that out in public. Just because I've seen other people do it and it's nobody ever told them not to. Okay, so. But I am happy today because I have a friend, I have a lover, I have somebody that I want to spend the rest of my life with. You know, I don't have any children, and sometimes that bothers me, and other times it doesn't. I purposely did not have children because I didn't want to have the baby's daddy always there, some guy that I hate or whatever, you know? Seriously. And when I finally meet somebody that I wouldn't mind having his child, you know, I'm kind of old. And honestly, I don't want to be like, oh, is that your grandma? No, it's my mom. And then I spend the weekend with some ladies that have kids, and I'm like, shit. I got it good. We're going to go motorcycle riding on our 3-week trip, and we don't have to take any kids with diapers with us. So I keep coming back. I was gonna say because I have nowhere else to go, but and that's partly true. But you know, I love the people in this room. I have a friend of mine who's having a very difficult time. And I said to her, can I send you some stuff? And what I was gonna do was go through the big book and take out the acceptance is the answer to all my problems and take out little excerpts out of there to send to her because she's a normal person, she doesn't drink. She doesn't have the tools that we have that help us to look at our life and realize I have a choice, I can make a change. Nothing changes if nothing changes. So I was like, well, it'll take a while because I got to put some stuff together. So I was just going to go through and take some of those sayings out of there and send it to her because I don't know how else to explain to her that you have a choice. You don't have to be miserable. Or you can just accept it where your life situation is and be happy with that too. There's not a lot of things that I want today besides that little, it's a mini projector on a little tripod. You can hook up your phone to it and it can go on the screen. That was pretty cool. Brookstone at the mall if anybody's looking for a Christmas gift for me. But for the most part, there's nothing that I really want today. I don't have one. What do you want for Christmas? Nothing. I would rather spend Christmas chit-chatting with a bunch of my friends, playing games, laughing, hanging out with my family, because that is more important. The learning to forgive, what's more important? I've seen too many people that live with regret for not taking care of stuff that they needed to take care of, whether it's family or a friend or whatever. in the whole gist of life, it's one little incident. And like I said, everybody has their demons and their own stuff. It's nothing personal against me. So I forgive him, and obviously I'm not going to let him do it again, but I can have peace in knowing that I can tell that person I love him today, regardless of the things that they've done, because things are just things. It also says in the, I think it's in the big book. I'll just say this and then I'll pass. The world judges me by my actions while I, how does that go? The world judges me, I judge myself by my intentions while the world judges me by my actions. So, you know, the lady at work who says, thank you for holding the elevator. Usually people push the button to close it. And I'm thinking, that's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. Why would you not hold the elevator? Of course, it's only a three-story building, so it's not like you're going up that high, but nonetheless. But people are like that, and they fail to see the things that are going on around them. And it takes 2 seconds to do that, you know? So, I don't know. Thanks for listening and for being here with Outpass.